It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, my partner, Mike Ward, is on assignment. I think it's King Master Tournament this weekend is the assignment. So hopefully good luck to him and the crew. Go catch a big king, Mike, and bring him on back and win some prizes. And then we can get back to maybe snapper fishing something. Looks like a couple more weekends here, and it's kind of this moving target, talking to folks with the state, consuming maybe around 9% of what's left of the available catch weekend to weekend. And so that may give us even a few more weekends. It's going to end sometime soon. We don't know exactly when, but heck, for those of us that thought it was going to be over before rodeo, and here we sit in August, take everything we can get. It's actually great news as well for tournaments coming up. And we got one real special and a special tournament. I don't know how to – I've often said in the past, it's a fantastic party that also has – a fantastic fishing rodeo, or it could be the flip around. It's a fantastic fishing rodeo as a fantastic party with it. Either way, it's the 19th annual Mystic Stripers Rodeo going on, and Mystic Charles joins us to talk more about that. Thanks for your time. Thanks for coming back on.
Gee, thank you so much. I can't tell you. We want to thank God for America and fishing and 106.5. This is the 19th annual Mystic Stripers Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, and we want to thank you so much. You've been with us every single year along this great ride, and we can't tell you how much we appreciate it, Sean.
Hey, we're excited for y'all, and it's a great event, and I had worries. I said, you know, Mardi Gras crew puts on a fishing tournament. Let's see how they can do this. We know they know how to get floats and all that kind of organization done. How can they do? And y'all did a great job. So I don't know if it's just the organizational chops of being a Mardi Gras organization or just the people in it, but y'all put on a great tournament every year.
It's called Living Right and associating with the right radio stations and people like yourself. We find out that the harder we work, the luckier we get. And we're working all year long to try to make this thing a very good rodeo and an experience not only for people who are fishing, but for family and so on and so forth. This becomes another year of 19 years where our fishing rodeo tickets are only $25.
That's awesome. Still,
I mean, it's just amazing. And our kids, Trash Can Slam, the anglers there, $10 per angler. I mean, it's like we're out necessarily trying to be there for everybody, but the St. Jude Children's Hospital, they also benefit from this so much, and it's a win-win situation for everybody there.
All right, let's talk about this as we talk about winning, getting our tickets. Tournament's coming up on the 14th, right?
Yes, sir. It's August the 14th at the Dolphin Island Marina. You can find us on Facebook at MSS Fishing Rodeo. You can also go online to get your tickets right now. That's right now at Eventbrite.com. Type in Mystic Stripers. The Mystic Stripers Rodeo is obviously always at MSSRodeo.com. We've got 16 fish categories, fresh and saltwater, with cash prizes. And, again, our rodeo tickets are $25. We have cash jackpots for the speckled trout and king mackerel jackpot, and they're only $25 per boat. We got a one fish winner takes all in that regard. And what we have are special prizes. $500 go to our master angler, and then we've got $250, $150, and coinciding prizes as each one of the categories go on. So it's literally fun for everybody. There are tons of door prizes, and even better, because we have this a lot every single year, there are a lot of people that want to participate and want to buy tickets to our rodeo, and we encourage that. And they can win door prizes and things like that without fishing one second, that's for sure. All they have to do is, like I said, either go online and or there are always our in-store places, which is our favorite, and these are consistent. This is the Dolphin Island Marina. This is the Deer River Bait Shop, Greer's Food Tiger on Fowl River, Southern Bama, tackle this, shoot that, ship and shore. You can go and actually purchase a physical paper ticket there. I mean, I know we're in the digital world so much of everybody buying things online, and it is convenient to do that. But you can do it either way, and we appreciate these people so much for helping us out.
If I go into a, if I stroll into a sponsor or a ticket location, or if I do it online, when's my drop dead on this? When do I have to have my ticket purchased?
Okay, you have to have your ticket purchased by 5 a.m. on the 14th,
okay,
Saturday
day of.
Morning.
All right.
So yeah, we would recommend that you get it before on the 13th and so on and so forth. And we're going to make sure that everybody that wants a ticket, whether it's in person at these locations and or online at eventbrite.com, type in Mystic Striper Society or Facebook, that we have the access available to you.
All right, so we can get, yeah, so there's not like a, we don't have to do a captain's meeting or anything, right? We can just get our ticket, fish, and then show up at the marina.
Get it and go. Now, I'm going to go ahead and give you the Sean Sullivan version of our fish weigh-in.
Okay.
So officially, I will declare this, Sean Sullivan and the Mystic Striper Society officially allow you to weigh in all your fish on August the 14th naked. That's right. They can all come and you can. And you
We're
can
trying to sell tickets fish. Here, Mystic Charles. We're not trying to run people off. We're trying to sell tickets.
Absolutely.
Y'all, it just depends. Mike Ward, if you're listening out there, that is not for you. You're not weighing it in that way. Do not listen to Mystic Charles. And Waystation opens. When do y'all at 10? When do y'all close out on Saturday? When do
now,
we have to be in?
It's a 5 o'clock gun, meaning we shoot the fireworks. We shoot the big flare into the sky at 5 p.m. So you've got to have them in and weighed by 5 p.m. We also, I want to say a special, I mean, we want to thank all of our, you know, Mystic Striper Society, their sponsors, so on and so forth, and everything like that. We have new sponsors this year. Our consistent sponsors are the Bass Pro Shops, L&M Tires, Smith Electric, Dennis Lang and Construction, Don's Heating and Air, Judy's Place. But we have some new folks this year. And a special thanks goes out to Chris. Chris can fix anything at Precision Collision. Go see him. We've got new Mardi Gras organizations. We've got Pop's Mardi Gras at the old Army Navy store at the Loop, Billy's Bacon and Restaurant over in Fairhope, and we'd also like to thank the Shrimp Lady, that's Tally, up there in Satsuma. She's doing a really bang-up job up there. Go see her. And we have an official rodeo food truck now called the Hot Doggery Food Truck. I'm sure you've had that before. Kim McDonald and her crew, they do just such a fantastic job, and she's going to make sure that we have what I call Genesis to Revelations, meaning early in the morning, 5 o'clock when people are out, she's doing breakfast there, and then all the way into the end, she's staying there pretty much all day. So you cannot go hungry at the rodeo this year, that's for sure.
That is perfect. All right, Mr. Charles, remind folks, once again, online, they're listening, online as well as in person, tickets need to be bought by 5 a.m. on the 14th. Best place to go, you think, is your Facebook, or go straight to the website? How do they do it?
You can do Facebook. You can go to MSS Fishing Rodeo there. You can go to eventbrite.com, type in Mystic Stripers, and or the MSS Rodeo, our website there. And that's three options there. And then, of course, all of our in-person categories that I listed. And you know something, just go in and get a ticket there. And we really appreciate it. Can't tell you how much we appreciate 106.5. And you, Sean Sullivan, for being 19 years. How old were you 19 years ago?
Like 17 let's see, or 18? I'm 49 like now, so yeah, whatever that was, 20? Yeah, something like that. All right, man, we appreciate you. Best of luck, and we'll see you down at Dolphin Island Marina.
We hope you do that. Thank you very much, and God bless fishing, and God bless 106.5.
There he is, Mystic Charles, Mystic Stripers Rodeo, coming up on the 14th. Hey, speaking of things coming up this week, lucky few get to gator hunt. We're going to talk about the upcoming gator hunt with wildlife biologist with the state of Alabama. Chris Nix joins us next. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. My partner, Mike Ward, is on assignment, which means he's fishing a tournament, which is fine. Next week I'll fish a tournament, put I'll be on assignment, make him do the show. Something like that. We'll work it out. All right, as I mentioned as we went into the break, here it comes. The first of the hunting season. So everybody's like, oh, Sean's going to talk doves again. Sean's going to be talking September teal again. No. The first of the hunting seasons, maybe. Depends on how you define this. Gator season starting this coming week here in Alabama for some lucky folks that got drawn for a gator tag here in the state of Alabama to talk with us all about gators in Alabama, the hunting season, and the whole long gator here. Chris Nick, supervising wildlife biologist with the Alabama Division of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. Thanks for being on.
Yes, sir, Sean. Anytime, buddy.
This is fun to talk about this, and I want to kind of delve into this. My first question, I kind of got into it. The first hunting season, or is it a fishing season? Because I've always, here at home, I've always called it hunting. And I hear from my friends in Louisiana, they don't hunt gators, Chris. They fish gators. What's the dang difference?
Well, you know, it's kind of all in the same. You kind of fish for them at first, and our typical hunting at the end.
It is a mix.
But no, you know, as far as our department defines it, it is a hunting season, and you have to have a hunting license in order to participate.
All right, so it is, but it is truthfully, yeah. If you talk about it, it's fishing and hunting.
It is. You know, there's several different ways that you can actually capture the alligator. So you know, and by far the most popular way and most successful way down here is what we would consider fishing, and that's by hook and line. But there are other methods that you can legally capture an alligator, which would not be considered fishing. But yes, yep. I mean, you're doing it in the water, and you're using a hook and a line for 95% of it, probably.
That's for sure. Yeah, well, I want to talk about those techniques coming up. I have a little trouble hearing you, but I want to kind of let's go in our time machine here. And you know, I grew up around here. There were some, you know, in the 80s, I started hunting the Delta in the 80s. There were some gators, but they were almost so few that we could kind of talk about, oh, it's that gator at Crab Creek, or it's that gator, you know, up there along the Tensaw, or that gator. Like, we almost could, there were so few that we kind of knew them, right? And that was back in the 80s to now, where we got a population that has gone well beyond the Delta and all over South Alabama.
Right. And, you know, that's exactly why we have the hunt that we do now. You know, a lot of people ask me, you know, why are you hunting alligators? And, you know, my first response to them is because we can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we want to offer the residents of and license holders of Alabama the opportunity to do so, and the non-resident lifetime license holders the opportunity. But, you know, this population, I mean, this has been a great success story for not just Alabama, but for the whole Southeast, as far as rebounding this population. So it's been great, and, you know, we are thankful that we're at a position now to where we do have a huntable population, not just here in the Mobile Tensaw Delta, but, you know, a lot of other places in the southern part of Alabama.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about the, you know, the hunt zones, but also the stretch of the gators, even where there's not hunt zones yet. But, you know, just a side note, and I think probably most folks, if not all the folks listening to the show, understand it, but maybe they can make that known to folks that the ultimate success story for a species is hunting them. You know, it seems like to people who aren't like us, that may shock them, but I talk to people all the time. I'll say, listen, you get a critter that's recovered to the point that a state agency says, yeah, it's okay to have a, you know, harvest on them. That's a success story.
No doubt. And, you know, one of the most recent ones, and this is kind of off the alligator topic, but you know, the sandhill cranes up in, yep, in North Alabama that we have now. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, what we've been able to do for certain species. But, you know, that's what we do as biologists, and, you know, that's our goal. But, you know, having these populations to a point to where they're healthy enough to sustain a hunt like this, a limited quota hunt, I mean, that's what we wake up smiling to every morning.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, the great success story. Yeah, let's talk about gators in the state, and then we can talk about the hunt zones. But, you know, it's Southwest Alabama, probably, you know, obviously it's where the season started, one of the best chances for the population, even way back when it wasn't doing well. Today, doing great. And here, I mean, it's not a couple weeks go by that there's not some story about, you know, gator up at the up in Decatur in the refuge, or you know, somewhere on the Tennessee River, you know, those kind of places where gators have moved to the opposite end of our state. I mean, that's, I guess you could get reports from anywhere in Alabama.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, that as far as Alabama goes, you know, you got the southern population, which is a reproducing population, and then you've got that very small, minute population up in northeast Alabama. You know, they probably do reproduce a little bit, but, you know, you got to think of alligators as being cold-blooded animals, you know, so they're very similar to snakes. You know, they've got to regulate their internal temperatures with external temperatures, and that's no different for little ones when they have them. So, you know, as far as reproducing populations up in North Alabama, I mean, it's going to be very limited. But, you know, down here where we have a warmer climate, I mean, we've got as good a habitat in the Mobile Tensaw Delta as anywhere. We just don't have as much of it as other states do in the southeast, you know, like Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida. But we are very thankful for what we do have, and we're trying to manage that. But, you know, it's continuing to grow, but, you know, not only is the alligator population continuing to grow, but, good gosh, the human population in
sure
these two counties down here where we have most of our prime habitat is continuing to grow, too. And we deal with that on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's, you know, there's a discussion of this species as, you know, a game animal. We're going after it as a game animal, a managed, but it's also something that is something that has to be managed by the state in a non-game manner, right, as nuisance calls and those kind of things.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I spend a lot of my time every day, you know, during, I'd say, 6 months out of the year, talking to people about how to live with alligators. Because, you know, we have a lot of people that move down here that's not from South Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And they see alligators on TV or wherever on the Internet. And, you know, I have to try to convince them that, you know, alligators are not what they see on TV. They are here, and we have to learn to live with them. And it's a very difficult situation to deal with at times, but we do the best that we possibly can.
Yeah, do you get that reaction, Chris? This is like a bigger one. I think about it. We get in discussions of Western game and those, you know, reintroductions, whether you're talking about wolves or grizzlies or others. But do you ever get that reaction from folks that why do we have to live with them? I mean, I know it's kind of a tough question, but I think it's a fair one that they'll say, well, why don't you just get rid of all of them?
And, you know, we choose to live here. The alligators were here way before we were. You know, so they have to have their habitat to survive in. And as we encroach on that habitat, you know, it's our responsibility to respect the species that thrive on it. You know, alligators are not going to crawl in our bedroom windows at night and eat our whatever. But that they have a higher fear for us than we do of them. So we, you know, number one, the biggest problem that we have down here is feeding alligators.
Yeah.
People are in.
Are people still doing that? I thought everybody knew that you shouldn't do that.
Well, I wish everybody knew that you shouldn't do that. But, yes, people still do. That is the number one no-no with alligators. You know, enjoy the fact that you're actually getting to see one. But the number one thing is never, ever, ever feed them. You know, we
so you're still getting calls on that there's some conditioned gator that people have been feeding?
Every day.
Every day? Really?
Yep.
People still
and,
don't? Wow.
Yep. And most of the time it is, you know, from people that are out of town. They are intrigued by them. They see them, and they want to give them a french fry or whatever it may be. But, you know, it's not that person that has to worry about it. It's the person that comes up after that. You know,
mm-hmm.
Once that mechanism in an alligator's brain has been trained to associate humans with something positive, like a free food source, you can't reverse that. And that's when we have to step in. And virtually they're killing the alligator because we can't relocate that alligator. You know, if it's a problem at point A, we can't take it somewhere else and it continue to be a problem. So So we do have to euthanize those animals. And it's not the alligator's fault. So that's what we try to do, is educate people on how to live with them. You know, respect their distance. Don't feed them. They're here, and they're always going to be here.
But we
just have to learn to live with them.
Well, and it seems like, you know, the benefit of these seasons is it may, I don't know, it may mitigate, you know, the number of gators to have that interaction, even though people shouldn't do it. But, I mean, and how do y'all look at that? Do you look at it as a mitigation of possible future calls, you know, to your office on a problem gator? Or is management done like we think about deer in the state of Alabama, right? That here's carrying capacity, here's where we need to keep it. How do you look at gators?
Well, it's actually both. And it depends on where we're talking about. So you take, for instance, the traditional Southwest hunting zone that we had down here.
Which is Mobile, for people who hadn't done it, Mobile Tensaw Delta, basically.
Well, right? Basically, yeah. But it was all of Mobile and Baldwin counties, and extending all the way up to Highway 84, mm-hmm. which is, you know,
yeah, good way
to Washington County.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you remember a couple of years ago, we changed the zones and created a coastal zone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about the human population in Mobile and Baldwin counties, the majority of it along waterways is south of I-10.
Yeah.
So that's why we created the coastal zone, to kind of force the hunters south of I-10 to harvest some of those alligators where the human population is so high.
Those have a better chance of becoming a nuisance gator.
100%.
Okay.
100%.
On the flip side, then, if you're, you know, we're up in the back of Chuckfee, or we're way up the rivers or something, that's less about that and probably more about population. Am I guessing?
100%. Yes. I mean, you're totally correct, and that's what I was getting at. And it just depends on where you're talking about, on how we try to manage the population. You know, the health of the species is always the forefront, but we also have to deal with human populations too. So, you know, that's kind of the history behind the creation of the coastal zone, is we want more hunters to go south of I-10 and harvest some of those alligators. I would much rather a hunter be able to go harvest one rather than, you know, one of our NUCO officers or one of our staff to go down and basically waste an animal.
Right, yeah, it is such a win. I mean, when you can do it as a hunt, you know, people get the excitement of going, satisfaction going. It's a use of the resource. It's revenue to the department, right? I mean, these things versus cost.
It's very limited revenue. You know, if you was to compare the cost of being able to participate in an alligator hunt in Alabama compared to other states, you're talking pennies to dollars.
Sure. That's for sure. I tell you what, we're going to run to the break and come back. More of this conversation. I want to ask when we get on this management front, too, kind of the idea of managing populations. We think about it with deer, for example. Does that apply in gators as well? Continue our conversation all about gators. Our guest, Chris Nix, supervising wildlife biologist, Alabama Division of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, right here on the Causeway, District 5. It's the best district, right? All right, be right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. Good to have this conversation as well. As gator season's opening up this coming Thursday here in Alabama, gator hunting season, although it involves fishing and hunting. Great to have the conversation with the man who watches this for all of us right here in this neck of the woods, Chris Nix, supervising wildlife biologist with the Alabama Division of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. We're talking alligators, Chris, and I was wondering as we went to the break, kind of the management idea. This is interesting because one component's trying to reduce nuisance calls, but there is a wildlife biologist management of population part of this as well.
Absolutely, you know, and that's kind of first on our radar, you know, is to look at the species first. But you know, human populations and you know that always comes into play as well. But first and foremost, you know, we want to thrive to have a healthy population of whatever species it is that we're dealing with.
Yeah, and that's a question on gators, I think, and it, maybe we can do an abbreviated version. I'm sure there's a PhD level of it. But how many gators is the right amount? You know, when I think about deer, you know, looking at browse lines or looking at the health and weight, you get on a DMAP program. You know, one of y'all biologists come out, look at the deer, say, okay, they're skinny, they're fat, or they're fine, or they're medium. The population needs to be where it is, or you need to take it down. Like, do you do that in gator populations? Is there a right density per square acre of water? Or how is that?
We do. It's not that cut and dry. But yes, we do. We monitor alligator populations. We have nighttime population management that we do every year. So I have set routes that I run and fixing to run one possibly tonight down here. But we look at trends in alligator numbers. For instance, down here in the Mobile Tunstall Delta, you know, I will keep up with numbers in Big Batty Bay, Chukchi Bay, Blakely River, and there's probably 15 or 20 that I run down here. But we look at trends on alligator populations as far as numbers. In addition to that, once we started the alligator hunt, you know, we have a mandatory check station that everybody has to bring their alligator back to down here. You know, at that check station, we check the sex of the alligator, the total length, the belly girth, the tail girth, and the head length of every alligator that comes in. So, you know, we even at that, we look at trends over a period of time. I just got through doing some spreadsheets earlier today on that exact same thing. So, you know, We have to look at the health of the animal and how they're surviving over a period of time. It's not a given year that we just look at, but it's over a period of time.
Okay, is it like, and I don't, well, you and I could go way deep in the weeds on this, but
absolutely.
Is it more like flying transects for waterfowl comparing year to year versus?
100%. I mean,
okay.
It's basically the same thing.
Okay.
And you know, when Seth Maddox and them comes down to do that, they look at, you know, they're counting numbers and they're looking over a period of time at trends and harvest rates and that's how we base our recommendations to whatever species that we're talking about, you know, as far as harvest numbers go.
And one of the questions I've always had on this, and y'all, I'm wearing the ear out on Chris Nix here because I do have these questions. Population management, if we, you know, even though it's different than deer, but you know, we'd think if we want to reduce the population, all right, y'all got to shoot some does, right? If you're talking to people about deer hunting, with the alligator process here, I guess if we truly were trying to, you know, keep a population in check, you'd want to kill females, right? You want to kill female gators, but isn't kind of the nature of when somebody goes hunting and they want them a big old gator, isn't it kind of contrary to that?
It is, and you know, some of the restrictions, and I can give you a perfect example that we have. You know, here in the Mobile Tunstall Delta, we don't have a size restriction. It's any alligator of any length that you can harvest.
Okay.
So, you know, a female alligator is going to, 95% of them is going to be below, I would say, 9 foot. You know, occasionally you'll get a few that gets bigger than that. Over in Lake Eufaula, we have a size restriction on the harvest over there. So we have 20 available tags there, but every alligator that's harvested has to be above 8 foot. So what we're trying to
gotcha.
Do there is protect that female portion of the population in order to let that population grow some more, because we started seeing a decline in recruitment and total population numbers on Lake Eufaula. So that's why we implemented that restriction over there.
And the males, I mean, kids are really an overage, right? I mean, once there's enough of them that if people are harvesting those older bulls and those bigger, it really doesn't, other than minus one, it doesn't affect that population.
Correct. So, you know, that's why, I mean, we have a population down here that is healthy enough to where we don't have to have a restriction on it. But the majority of the animals that we harvest down here, I would say probably 75%. Or male. But that's kind of getting back to that whole deer relationship. You know, when someone goes alligator hunting, they don't want to kill a 4-foot alligator.
Right.
They want to kill a 10-foot or 11-foot or 12-foot alligator. So everybody's going after the males, and that's why that higher population or higher portion of the harvest is of the male portion.
Let's talk big gators for a second here, too, on this, and how much of a influence do you think having the Stokes gator, Mandy's gator, what world record alligator coming from Alabama, now north of us, up towards Miller's Ferry, but still does that bring people in here that have huge gators in their eyes? You know what I'm saying? That they're in here like I'm not gonna shoot that 11 footer. I'm in the place that produced almost 15-9.
It does, but I tell you what, Sean, it seems like it happens prior to the hunt more so than it does during the hunt.
Uh-huh.
Because when you get a 10 foot alligator next to your boat, that's a big animal.
Yeah, they are.
Yes, so kind of the way that I explain it to people is if you hook and get a 10-foot alligator next to your boat and you harvest it, it's kind of similar to harvesting a 130-inch buck in South Alabama.
That's rare.
And that's a good deer.
It's a real good deer.
Right. Right.
Okay.
A 10-foot alligator is a good alligator.
Y'all hear that? Yeah, so that's coming from Chris. I mean, would you shoot a 130-inch deer? I know I would. So
absolutely.
Would you take that 10-foot gator? Let's talk about the people getting in to the getting a tag and getting drawn and the process here. And we can talk about the different areas. But, one of the changes, and I've said to cohorts of yours in the past, well done, is when we change that process. So I've been putting in for gator seasons here in Alabama since the beginning. Took a couple years off. It got to be a point, I'll just tell you, this is just me, I'm not speaking, but where I heard stories of, this guy had $10,000 he brought in and bought all these entries, and this person brought, $8,000 worth, and here I was buying, sub-$100 worth or something like that. I was like, man, I'm outpaced on that. And then that's how it used to work, right, until a few years ago?
100%. Yes. So, our first hunt was back in 2006, and, at that time, you could register as many times as you wanted to, as deep as your pockets was. If I remember right, it was $7 an application. So, there was people that were spending $2,000 or $3,000 at that time, and they was virtually buying themselves a tag.
Right.
So what we have tried to do since then, and it has been a very long process, is try to bring quality back to the application. So, where we are now, you can only register one time per hunt zone per person. And in addition to that, we have implemented a preference point or bonus points.
Which I love. I think that's, I'm used to that from applications out west, but that really keeps me in the game.
It does. So, I have a lot of people each year that will apply for the alligator hunt knowing that they're going to be out of town, having a wedding or mm-hmm. something that, will not allow them to participate in the hunt, but they will still register just to be able to continue their preference point.
And explain, maybe we take a second there to explain to folks what we're talking about, preference points, how it works. So I get in year one and I don't get drawn. All right. So what happens then?
Right. So in order to build your preference points, you have to apply for a particular zone each year. So preference points are built zone specific. So, if you lose your preference points in the southwest zone and you're still registered for the coastal zone, you can still continue those preference points. The way that they're built is you take the number of previous years, and we implemented this process in 2014, I believe it was. So you take the number of previous years that you have continuously applied for a particular zone without drawing a tag, and you cube that number. So, say for instance, you have applied for the southwest zone for 3 previous years.
Mm-hmm.
You take 3 and you cube that, which is 27, and then you get 1 additional point for your current year registration, so you would have 28 points. So if you think back, all the way back to 2014, that would be, 6 years?
Right.
I'm not a mathematician off the top of my head.
What, 2014, seven years.
Is a lot of points.
Yeah.
So that's basically how many times your name is going into the pot for the drawing.
Yeah, the more time that goes on, statistically, the better chance you have of getting drawn.
Yes, and the purpose for that was to limit the number of people that is getting drawn back-to-back years, and allow the people that have not drawn in recent years to an opportunity to get, to go hunting. Now, with that being said, everybody has an opportunity to be drawn.
First year, it happens.
Happens every year. But they have a lot lower chance of being drawn.
This is coming right back. More of our conversation here. A lot to get into as we talk Gators with Chris Nix with the state of Alabama. We got the Gator season starting coming up Thursday. And we'll talk about those dates and kind of the hunting process of that and the rules around that as we continue to think about fishing and hunting gators at exactly the same time. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Big thank you to Louie and the gang over there. Folks, see if Louie was fishing the other day. Well, I think he was on the radio with Dan and Dalton. That's my kind of guy. He understands fishing and cars. It's a good thing. So, Louie, hopefully you're out again this morning. All right, and continuing our conversation, we're talking gators. Gator season opens up on Thursday here in Alabama for a select lucky few, and talking about that, and more each year, though, with Chris Nix, wildlife biologist with Alabama Division of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. How many people this year? How many tags? What are you, 100 in this? Break down the zone. There are five zones. How many people got drawn?
Right, yeah. So statewide, we've got a total of 260 tags that's available. We got five zones in the southwest zone, which is here, Mobile, Tensaw Delta. We got 100 tags there. We've got 50 tags in the coastal zone, which is Mobile and Baldwin County, south of I-10, up in around Miller's Ferry, Camden area, which is the west central zone. We got 50 tags there. We've got an area of about 10 counties over in southeast Alabama that has 40 tags, and then the Lake Eufaula proper and its tributaries, we've got 20 tags available there.
And you, I mean, the trends, we just sitting back from the outside watching this, the trend is there's going to be, as the years go by, more tags and more zones, right? I mean, we just keep growing.
Right. No, we're continuing to do additional surveys, looking at additional properties, additional waterways, to where we can offer more opportunities. And those will become available, I can assure you. We just have to do it based on the available populations, rather than the available one.
What about that, as you survey here, and I don't run out of time, but, you and I have been talking during the news break there and talking about different places, and we're talking about public waters. But people can hunt, if they get a gator tag and they've got a gator on private land, they can use it there, right?
100%, yes. So the restrictions on the alligator tags is you can harvest an alligator on any public or private waterway within the zone. Say a private waterway would be somebody's private pond, or I shouldn't even say this on air, but Big Creek Lake, is basically a private pond over there, but you have to have permission to get there. If you want to go hunt on the Tensaw River, you don't have to have permission there. So it's any public or private waterway. At any given time, if you have water in Mobile or Baldwin counties down here, you've either had an alligator, you've got one, or you're going to at some point in time.
And people just need to get used to that. I mean, and that's what you're saying at the beginning of the show too. People learning to live with them. We get them, in stock ponds. They'll be in one of our cattle stock ponds one day, and then they'll move into another pond and be there for a while. And then, I had one on a dirt road about 100 yards off Airport Boulevard the other day, moving, just shuffling.
I deal with it every day, I can assure you. I really try to teach patience and, the proper way to live with a species for a short period of time. And if you just give the alligator time and let Mother Nature take its course, that is by far the best method, for both the animal and for us, rather than us having to come in and do something with the animal.
I would just add a side note here, then I got a couple more questions. For folks who are lucky enough to own land that has water on it, you know what beats a 330 conibear? It's an alligator. If y'all got beaver issues, there's like, I would much rather have a gator than have to trap them. So
right,
that's a
right.
Side.
You know, and talking about our nuisance alligators down here, you know, most of them that I get calls on are probably 6 foot and below. And, you know, as far as I goes, and, you know, I've dealt with thousands and thousands of alligators, but, you know, a 4 foot alligator and below, it's really not a nuisance.
Right.
It's not going to show any harm to humans or pets or livestock. You know, unless it's in your swimming pool, then it's a nuisance. But, you know, if it's just in a pond or in a creek, you know, just let the alligator be an alligator and let it go about its way. It's not going to hurt you. But, you know, there are certain situations where we do have to step in. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, where we are, you know, south of I-10 and in the coastal zone. And we just want to be able to control that and, you know, everybody kind of live happily down here, you know, with the wildlife that we do have to deal with.
Well said. Quick question here, too, because I think – I know that people who draw a tag, they go through the education here. You got the course where they go and do this. But people may not know this. They watch, you know, TV shows, the Gator Catching Show, Swamp People or something like that, and see them selling alligators. That's a different commercial fishery in Louisiana, for example, right? I mean, what can somebody who kills an alligator with a tag here, what can they do with that alligator afterwards?
Right. Well, once they harvest the alligator and they come back here and they get their federal CITES tag, it's their animal, and they can do whatever they want to. There are places, you know, in Louisiana. I know a tannery in Georgia that a lot of people that I deal with, you know, they send their animals there. But, you know, as far as the hunters, you know, it runs the gamut. You know, some people will get a full body mount of the alligator done. Some people will just want to keep the head and the meat. Some people want to tan the hide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all on you know, that particular person on what they want to do with it. I encourage everybody to use every piece that they possibly can. But
some good meat.
Yes, it is. But, you know, also what the hunters have to remember, that's a lot of work.
You know, about it.
So when you come in and, you know, the hunt, you know, runs from sunset to sunrise, and, you know, by the time you actually harvest an alligator, it may be 2 o'clock in the morning, and you're at the check station. And I've had people look at me when they're at the check station and say, well, what am I supposed to do now? Well, get a game plan prior to your hunt, because you're going to have to take care of that animal pretty quickly, or it's going to start spoiling. So, you know, I encourage everybody to utilize, and we owe that to the animal after we harvest it, you know, to utilize every part of it that they possibly can.
Well said. People want more information about this. Maybe they've piqued their curiosity for next year. Where do they find out more information about getting in for next year's gator season?
Yes, so the application process will start each year around the 1st of June. You can go to outdooralabama.com. We'll have a link there. With information on the dates and the times of the registration. You'll have basically a month, a little better than a month, to register, and then we'll start pulling the tags from there. And then we issue the tags usually mid-July to late July. And so they're all in the mail now, and everybody's getting ready to participate in the hunt.
That is for sure. I really appreciate your time with us, and we have to get you come back on soon. Maybe we'll talk after the season, see what folks did.
Sean, anytime, buddy. Enjoy the time with you.
All right, Chris Nix, supervising wildlife biologist with the Alabama Division of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, our guest. We're out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next. I'll see y'all next week.